is knowing.
All right, man. Welcome to Crow 777 Radio. This is hour one of episode 572. Jason Lindgren is with me, as always, and returning is Holistic Hilda. She first showed up with us on episode 540. We did a bit of a preview of what we're going to get into today. Basically, Hilda is going to lay down the 11 principles outlined by Weston Price. For anyone who wants to know more about the man, the wiki isn't too bad, which isn't usually the case. His full name is Weston Andrew Ballou Price. He was born in 1870 and he died at age 77 in 1948. Basically, he did observations about health with indigenous peoples and started to question why do other modern societies look bad in comparison. With that, I'll leave it there. Jason, welcome.
And a beautiful good morning.
I'm kind of excited. It looks like we might actually get an early spring here, and I am gearing up to fire up my solar telescope for the first time. So hopefully we can get that going this year. With that, let's jump in. Welcome back, Hilda.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm greatly pleased to be here.
Oh, it's good to have you. You have a very happy voice. So where would you like to jump in? Do you want to lead the way or do you want me to lead us in?
Oh, I can lead the way. And because I follow you closely, I know you like to start with where people can find your guests. So I'll remind people, I'm Holistic Hilda. You can find me at holistichilda.com. You can follow me on social media. Yes, I'm still on there on Instagram. I'm on YouTube with a Holistic Hilda account. And I am the host and producer of the Wise Traditions podcast for the Weston A. Price Foundation. So that's where I'm at. And I'm so happy to be here because this information is life and health saving. And get this, it didn't necessarily come from Weston Price only or from Sally Fallon Morrell, who started this foundation in the name of Dr. Price. It came from ancient sources, from indigenous people groups around the world who lived in such a way that they were living their birthright, which is good health. They were full of vitality and fertility, optimism and vigor. And what happened was, just to recap a little bit, Dr. Price traveled in the 1930s. He was a dentist and a researcher. He wrote numerous papers for various medical journals, and he wanted to find the healthiest people on the planet. So he took it upon himself. For 10 years, he and his wife, Florence, went all around the world, from Switzerland to the Outer Hebrides Islands to the South Sea Pacific Islands to Africa to Alaska. It was all over the place. And what he found was mind-blowing, not to certainly to Crow and Jason, and maybe not even to you as a listener, but he found that the people living according to their traditions, following their dietary and lifestyle habits, were the healthiest. They were living their best lives. And then the people that were related to them, but started to depart from some of those traditional ways, started to suffer from the chronic diseases that plague mankind even today. They would get cavities, and so they would have tooth decay. He was a dentist, so he would notice the teeth first. But then he saw that they would have illnesses that had never before appeared in their traditional villages and so forth. What happened was, especially he noticed the changes in their diet. They started to incorporate the displacing foods of modern commerce, as Dr. Price called them, foods that took the place of their more nutrient-dense, natural, traditional foods that were local and vibrantly alive, foods that were like amazingly capable of nourishing their bodies. And they displaced those foods with white flour, white sugar, bad oils, and canned things, you know, sweetened foods. And it just affected their health tremendously. So Dr. Price wrote a book called Nutrition and Physical Degeneration. And this is just setting the stage, you all, because what we're going to do today is go through the 11 principles that the Weston A. Price Foundation, in Dr. Price's name, recommends, especially related to nutrition.
So, I mean, you bring up so many things, and it seems to me that we're kind of like at the severe end of what Weston Price was observing, because now we have all kinds of things to throw on top of that. And we're not only getting into GMO foods, but we're surrounded by anti-natural vibrations with all the wireless and even the tuning of our music. So it seems to me that like where we all currently exist is a severe extension of what Weston noticed at the end of the 1800s, early 1900s.
This is also concerning because if he was doing this up to the 1930s, the food really wasn't that bad yet as far as we really can understand. I can only imagine where things would be at today.
I think we actually have good examples. I'd like to say the name of an indigenous tribe of the Americas, but I'm not sure I'm going to get it right. I think it's the Pima Indian tribe. There are a few tribes that had a terrible obesity problem, which underscores exactly what we're about to talk about. And I'm aware of one or two tribes that have actually gone back to finding the original corn strains and things like that to start to deal with what the modern food supply and use of sugar and things had done. But anyhow, go ahead, Hilda. Do you want to add anything to that?
Just that I think you both are right on the money. You're exactly right that we are in a worse situation now than the indigenous peoples that Dr. Price studied in the 1930s. And a case in point, which I know I brought up some of the stories from my travels to Ethiopia last summer in the original episode that you had me on, but I do want to comment this. Even though the people had not incorporated any displacing foods of modern commerce, in other words, I saw the Dorsey tribe, the Hammer tribe, the Mersey, the Dasanach, and the Caddo tribes in the Omo Valley in Ethiopia last summer, even though their food seemed to be pristine and good, these people did not look well. And I know it's because there are now toxins in the water and even in the air that we breathe. And as you mentioned, the non-native electromagnetic frequencies that are assailing them so that even if they're eating their right food, it's been contaminated. Our planet has been contaminated. Now, I'm not an alarmist. And as you pointed out at the top, Crow, I do like to be positive and happy. So what we're going to talk about today are some solutions, because if we can at least get our food right, that helps us have a sturdy place from which to stand. It gives us a launch pad for combating the things that are all around us and assailing us so.
You know, there's so many directions we can take this. Like, there was a TV show, I don't know, it's probably close to 15 or more years ago. It was about these two guys. I think it was maybe an American and a Brit. I remember the name of one of them. He was a real tall guy named Ollie. Maybe they were both Brits. And supposedly they went into the Amazon and contacted a tribe that was not really familiar with the outside world. And they found the exact same thing we're about to talk about. Their teeth were perfect and everything else. But what I began to notice was one example is like, if you ate an avocado or something like that, you had to replace what you ate from the garden, but their teeth were perfect. And the other thing that I noticed is everything they ate was seasonal, right? And mm-hmm. We are so far from that. Anything we want is in our grocery stores, but there is absolutely a correlation to the spiritual vibratory value of a food that comes ready naturally, as opposed to, you know, mass produced or hothouse grown. But I'll try to look up the name of that show because it was interesting in the way we're about to cover, and it underscores these ideas.
100%. And so, yeah, I want to just start with principle number one of the 11 dietary principles. And let me clarify. So Dr. Price identified, I believe, 7 or 8 of these. In other words, in his book, Nutrition and Physical Degeneration, he noted some of these commonalities that the traditional peoples were using dietarily. In other words, the things they had in common. But there were a few additional principles that the Weston A. Price Foundation added that they also had in common that perhaps Dr. Price did not note in his book. So it's a combination of his work and then springboarding from that, other things we've noticed. So principle number one, I know Dr. Price noted, which was that the traditional diets had no industrially processed or refined foods in their diet. So there were no white flours or extruded cereals or canned condensed milks, canned foods, and especially no seed oils. And so this, again, gave people, I was talking earlier about that foundation. It gave people this strong foundation. As you were saying about vibration, Crow, they were eating foods that were vibrantly alive from their location, that were not packaged up with a heart-healthy label plastered on it or something saying natural or organic. It was all those things. And there was no marketing team involved. So the thing people need to keep in mind as we go over these principles is that even today, in our modern age, we can make choices related to food as our ancestors did. It just takes a little bit of savvy to get around the marketing ploys and the people that want to make money from us, but don't have our health in mind. And I would say step number one for us to eat more of these single ingredient foods, if you will, is to find a local farmer's market or identify who your farmers are in your area. And I will say the Weston A. Price Foundation that I love so much that I make the podcast for, they have a system of chapter leaders around the world that their only job is to help you find real food. So if people want to go to westonaprice.org, there's literally a tab that says find local food and chapters. You click on it and look where you are in the world and see who's near you and ask for their help. Because as you've both implied, you and Jason, there are forces at play here in our lives that are kind of limiting and inhibiting our ability to get to these foods. And many of us now live in cities, so we're not having that quick, easy access. But I do recommend that people find their farmer to eat these foods that are not overly processed, because in the process, nutrients are lost and they are replaced with sugars and seed oils and things that damage our health. And what we want to do is get the foods that are rich in vitamins and minerals, because those are going to nourish us best.
Well, there's another aspect of this that I think we have to address. By the way, I looked it up. It's called, the show I was referencing actually had, looks like, three seasons, Mark and Ollie Living with the Tribes. I'm not telling you it's the best show ever, but it does underscore so many of the things we're about to talk about. But consider, like, when Jason and I first met and started doing the podcast, I did a number of shows trying to illustrate that we exist in a death-based system. What we're talking about here now underscores it, because if you honestly assess what any one of us listening eats in a day, I would be willing to bet that 90-something percent of that food is dead. And here's the example that I can give. Recently, I found a juicer in Rhode Island that juices using the Gerson method, which means it's cold-pressed, which means when the juice is produced, the life essence, for lack of a better descriptive, it's alive. When that juice is first pressed, if it's kept cold for a day or two, it is actually alive. And this place delivers. But here's the point I will make. Anyone out there who's never had juice from the Gerson method, or even just fresh squeezed orange juice, if you juice it the correct way, that juice has the life element in it. It's literally alive. And for all of us who have been living in this death-based system, when you drink a full 8-ounce glass of that, you instantly feel an energy that I can't really describe to people. But I mean, what do you think, Hilda? This is a major portion of what we're about to get into. There's no life left in our food. There's no life essence left in our food.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, honestly. I remember going to Kenya on one of my initial trips in 2015. And I met a young woman who said she could feel that difference, Crow, from when she was in the city of Nairobi to when she went back to the village where her grandparents and her parents raised her. She could feel the difference energetically. And she said, the reason I'm she told me in a few days, I'm going to go to the hospital for an assessment. She felt so poorly. And she said that one reason she was sure is because she was living in the city. But I don't think she made the analysis or understood that the vibration of the food she was eating was quite different. But she did tell me, you know, we're really entranced, she said, in a way, we're taken in by how posh, and that's the word she used, how posh the Western ways of eating are. And by that, she meant like Pizza Hut, Chicken Inn, all these, you know, fast food restaurants. And I remember discussing with her, I said, you know, if it's fast food, it's going to make you die fast. I was trying to think of an easy way to frame it for her. And I also told her, the longer the shelf life of the food, the shorter our own. And so I think you're really exactly right. The food we're eating is now no longer alive. It's so far removed from its own essence and roots that something's been lost in the process.
You know, there was a claim, I've never run it down, but there was a claim from some of the veterans that I knew that were a bit older than me that served in Vietnam. And here's the claim that was commonly made. And I don't know if it's a wives' tale, but it feels to me like there's probably some reality there. They claimed that when the people from the North, the indigenous people from the North in Vietnam were killed, almost immediately their bodies began breaking down. And what they were telling me was the Americans that were killed, it took a much longer time for their bodies to start breaking down. And they were saying this because they were claiming it had something to do with the preservatives in food. And while I've never run this down all the way to see if there's something to it, you've got to imagine that something like that is probably true for those of us that live on all these preserved things. I mean, what do you think? Do you think there's any reality to that? I don't know whether it's a wives' tale or not.
I think that's fascinating. And this is how I see it. The preservatives are meant to hold the food together, right? So it stays on the shelf a long time so it can be transported and be sold years from now. Those same elements are still holding that food together when it comes into the body. So that at the very least, I would say, we can't access whatever minimal amount of nutrients are still in there. It's still holding together. It's fighting digestion. So I don't even see how we could actually incorporate some of those things. So I do wonder if it's a wives' tale, but I do think there's truth in that preservatives are fighting us and not allowing us to maximize what we could get out of that food.
You know, it's a crazy thing because when you begin to look at the state of where our food's gone, a lot of us are going to go, well, there's clearly dark forces that are trying to kill us off. But you will find that people to some of the highest climbs in society, they're at Stop and Shop too, eating the same stuff, a lot of them, maybe not at the tip top of the iceberg. But for my part, where I have arrived now with all the years of looking at things as I have, health to me is basically simply defined as partially vibrational, but more than anything, it's nutrition. In other words, I would go so far as to say that you have a much better chance of healing any given malady with, say, supplements and nutrition than any Western medical drug of any kind. And it comes down to exactly what you're saying. The body can only repair itself, as far as I know, with things that it needs to build itself. In other words, if it's not natural, it's probably going to take no part in health.
Yeah, I think that's a great definition of health, right? And we do need to remember that there are forces at play that do want something else. Again, I try to focus on the positive, but we weren't born with a deficiency in vitamin K2, for example, which they say they want to give the baby a K2 shot the day it's born, the very day it's born, as if it weren't born perfectly beautiful. And the adjuvants, I could go on about this. This is a side note, but the Weston A. Price Foundation and I are convinced that there are nothing in those shots that we need. As a matter of fact, the adjuvants, even if the medical community thinks they're doing us some good by giving us these shots, the adjuvants, the carriers of some of the positive elements, supposedly, of the vaccine are so problematic because they too have preservatives like thimerosal, which contains mercury, and aluminum, which is a heavy metal that can go directly to the brain and affect the child's function. So by beginning the life with a shot in the, wherever they give it to the kid, you know, or in the buttocks or in the arm, is the last thing that baby needs. It needs to be skin on skin. Talk about vibration, right, Crow? Skin on skin with the mother. It needs to be nursing at her breast. She has everything the baby needs. I just came back, as I said, from some travels abroad. And in the indigenous communities that are still living according to their traditions, there's no doctor about in their huts, in their village. The women give birth, and then they nurse it, and they have their traditions that keep the life essence going, as you put it, Crow. So I'm,
which is considered dangerous now, by the way. We've done so many natural birth episodes, and the idea that I think I even said it out of my own mouth, one of the people we interviewed basically went home and had a new life almost on her own. And I remember saying the words, "You're brave," but what you're describing is a society that takes that far for the course.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And what made us ever think again that a woman couldn't possibly do this on her own? I had all four of my kids naturally. I did go to a hospital because I didn't know any better at the time, but I wasn't sick. Being pregnant is not a condition. It's a beautiful miracle. So I digress. So maybe I should go on to bullet point number two.
You should, but I want to state what made me think of that television show that you mentioned was the tribe had gorgeous, beautiful teeth. And these guys were both British, if I remember correctly. And the thing is they don't have toothbrushes. If I remember, I think they took their finger and rubbed their teeth with their finger to clean them off in any given day. But here's the funny thing. We have been taught to think so erroneously about something as simple as teeth that I was talking with Fortune, I don't know, 2-3 weeks ago, and I told him that I had the beginning of a cavity. And he said, you know, you can repair those. I said, what? He goes, yeah, you can repair the enamel on your teeth. And he sends me a clip on YouTube where a lady's describing that your enamel is a crystalline structure and crystals can grow. Now, if you turn on your television, you're going to be told that once your enamel is gone, it's gone. But that brings us back full circle to we go to an indigenous tribe and we are blown away that their teeth are nicer than ours and they don't have floss and toothpaste. And that really, I mean, what else is there? It comes down to nutrition, I think.
Well, not having tons of sugars sitting on your teeth helps, I'm sure.
That's true.
There you go.
It does help.
Well, natural sugars. The only sugars they're eating was made by nature.
That's right. And I may have mentioned this before, but it bears repeating. When Dr. Price visited some people in Switzerland, again, an isolated indigenous people group, he noticed like a thin slime on their teeth. Like their teeth weren't pretty to speak of, but they had no incidences or very low incidences of cavities. In other words, their dental health was amazing and they certainly weren't flossing or brushing. Nowadays, you're right, Crow, we hang our head in shame when we go to the dentist and we're like, oh, I guess my dental hygiene isn't good. If we have a strong nutritional foundation, we don't have to worry about all the things we've been told. And yeah, it's just often the opposite.
I mean, I don't want to pull us off topic here, but so anyhow, I had the beginning of the cavity. So I decided it wasn't a full drill. I knew it was just going to be, you know, lather it over. So I go in and the thing was, there was a crown there, a gold crown. And so I just went in to get the procedure done. When I get in there, I tell them no mercury fillings. You're going to use the filling stuff with no mercury, which they started to inform me how much better the other one was. But since this wasn't really a full-blown cavity, okay, they're not going to beef about it. I told them no fluoride. So the lady was okay with it, but the dentist, who was about 28 or 29, launches into this whole thing about the only reason our teeth are good in this country is because of the fluoride and starts questioning me about my toothpaste. And I tell him I use fluoride free. And he said, well, that's your problem. And I said, well, my teeth are good. He goes, yeah, but you're not getting, you know, so the very people tasked with taking care of our teeth are in there trying to convince me that mercury in my mouth is a more effective way and that I need this chemical that we all kind of know is not a good thing. But this is where we are in the Western world. And before I throw it back to you, I'll just ask, so is this malice aforethought? Or is this just simply science and money gone wild?
I don't think anyone's ever asked me that question. I think it's a combination.
So do I.
I do think on some level, there are people who absolutely know, for example, that fluoride might be okay topically to help prevent cavities, but it should never be ingested. And yet there it is in our toothpaste, there it is in our water. So some people think it's actually beneficial. It's a combination is what I'm getting at. Some people may of good intention be all for this. Other people may be doing it for greed and others may be trying to harm us. But regardless, what's so beautiful is that we can return to ways that have served humanity since the beginning of time and turn a deaf ear to them, which you're doing and I'm doing. The more we learn, the more we can do better and turn away and actually even turn within, I would say, to a deep knowing or inner intuition. Like when I had my children, I didn't know very much about, I guess, some of the things I know now, you know, about the harm that's out there in our world. But I knew enough that I knew I didn't want any interventions when I got to the hospital, much like you going to the dentist. I was like, you know what? I don't even want an IV because if you put an IV in me, then there could be this cascade of interventions where the next thing I know, you're saying, let's get some Pitocin in there to hurry things along. And then I need an epidural to give me anesthesia from the waist down. And I didn't want to even begin that downward spiral. And so I think if people listening, if any of this resonates with you, you're on the right track because make sure that you're honoring your life essence. And if when you do, you'll feel the difference, just like you feel the difference between a fake meat burger and a real meat burger.
Even just the quality, like when I was in the 60s and I went to McDonald's, the quality of that hamburger was miles and miles away from it is now. I don't even really think we can classify a McDonald's hamburger as food at this point. I don't. People have done videos where they put it on the table for a year and come back and look at it. It's just not food anymore. And this has been normalized. But to kind of circle back on the question I asked you, while I agree with you that I think it's science gone wild and that there is malice aforethought, what happened in 2020 for everyone who has a brain to rub a couple synapses together with, how do you ever get beyond the intentional harm that was perpetrated? How do you ever get by things like the stupid guidestones where they're saying, oh, we just need to kill 80% of the world and have this number? How do you get by places like the WHO or the WEF echoing that the population has to drop? When you put it all together, we have reached the crossroads. We're really being pulled away from the indigenous ideas is being utilized to basically reduce population and health. And that's where I've landed. And I think some people think I go too far with it, but I'm sorry, I can't step back from that line anymore.
Yeah, and I don't think you should apologize. There's nothing to apologize for. You're calling it like you see it, and that's beautiful. And I will say this, I will add that this is the silver lining of all that we went through, because it became so apparent to so many of us that there were evil forces at work, and that our health was not at the forefront of people's minds, and that they really wanted us to get all these injections. And by the way, now there are studies coming forth showing all of the effects, the negative effects and consequences of the shots that have caused all these myocardial symptoms and heart attacks. And suddenly people are dropping over dead, you know, at 20-something, things that didn't used to happen before. It's all coming to the fore. This is the silver lining of all that we went through, because it's opening people's eyes, and it's challenging them and encouraging them to move in a direction where they honor their own life essence and don't listen to the powers that be anymore.
Forcing us to grow up, forcing us to take responsibility. And it's gotten so severe. My dog broke one of his toenails in half. And then I later learned a day later, when I took a closer look after I trimmed it back, that he'd probably broken, at least cracked the bone of his toe in between two joints. Well, here's the rub. They will not allow me in to either of the vets here for the following reason. When I first got him, I took him in for a checkup, and I had funny feelings about doing it. And they had something, I don't even remember, Jason or him, it was like 13 or 14 inoculations they wanted to give my dog in his first under 2 years of life, I think it was. And they were trying to force a rabies shot, telling me it was the law. And I stood my ground and I said, you're not doing that to my dog. Nature still knows how to create living beings that are perfect. And so they told me, you can't come here anymore.
Wow.
So what it did for me was force me to reevaluate. And I remembered when I was in the 70s, we didn't take our dogs to the vet. The only time a dog went to the vet, if something absolutely horrible had happened. So it's forced me to step up, reevaluate, and take responsibility and deal with things that we've been taught, you know, you need a professional for this. But for me to get that help now, I have to sign off on turning my dog into a pincushion. Almost certainly, he will have dementia and die of cancer if I allowed that road to occur.
Yes. And of course, the veterinary industry is like growing by leaps and bounds. They, as a matter of fact, they don't even call them pets anymore. They call them fur babies. I don't know if you've heard this. I think it's also an attempt for some kind of programming to make people think that they should have pets instead of children, because that depopulates the earth. It's insane. But going back to your burger story, I do want to tell my own too. No one's ever asked me this, and I want to toss it in since you were talking about McDonald's. I used to love Roy Rogers Double R Bar Burger. I don't know if you remember those. Oh my gosh, it was like a thick, you know, slab of meat with ham on top and cheese. And I think they literally put butter on the buns. It was so good. And I would get it regularly. And then years went by and I became a foodie and thought, okay, no more fast food. But one time I was out with my mom, and this was more like in the 2000s now, and there was a Roy Rogers and I got one. It tasted like dog food. Speaking of dogs, it was, it was horrible. And I was like, this is not what I ate before, because I remember how good that thing was. So you're right, the quality has gone downhill. And this actually helps me segue into principle number two, which is all traditional diets contained animal products. Again, we see the dichotomy, the contrast between how Indigenous people lived and thrived and what the agenda is today. They're trying to get us to eat insects and less meat and suggesting that we eat meat substitutes created in a lab. But real animal products are consumed in such a way that our body can absorb all of its goodness. And often, by the way, they were consumed with the fat. So milk with the cream, egg with the yolks, meat and birds with the fat and fatty organs. It was all as nature intended and so nourishing on all the levels. So this was actually, as I mentioned probably in the earlier podcast, Dr. Price's greatest disappointment. He thought he would find some Indigenous people groups that were mostly eating plant foods and thriving, but he did not.
So we should get into this. This topic right here causes more upheaval and dissension between individuals than almost anything besides politics or religion, which is based in ridiculousness. But this food idea of whether or not we should eat meat is a constant source of turmoil in society. And from my point of view, if someone tells me I care about living things, which is why I'm not going to eat meat, I respect that. I respect that all day long. But I also know in my life, I would say maybe 5% of all the vegetarian people I knew actually got a healthy diet. And I will further say that I don't think one diet fits every body type out there in the world. As a matter of fact, if you go to a place like India, even today, you can find places where it's almost wholly vegetarian meals, but it is so variety. There is so much variety and care put into the production of that food that it is a long ways from what I think most American vegetarians might eat. So what do you think? Is it common practice, like Weston Price, would he have said there is absolutely no occurrence of any Indigenous peoples I've ever met that don't eat any animal products?
I think you're right. I think he found that some people didn't really eat much animal products because they didn't have access to it. So they would include insects or find protein in other ways. But the healthiest people definitely were meat eaters. And he actually studied the skulls of, I think, some folks in South America, if I'm not mistaken. And the thickest skulls were on those people groups that had access to fish, actually. So the idea is that we do need to eat more natural foods. You're exactly right. I don't think you would say that there were never any people that didn't eat meat. There were, but they found ways to make the best of their situation, including, as you said, eating a lot of whole, real food. And in India, I did interview someone recently on the Wise Traditions podcast, and she said, there is a misunderstanding that we don't eat meat. She said, a lot of us do, but there is a great anti-meat propaganda there, as there is around the world. But she did say also that certain castes eschew meat for spiritual reasons and so forth. But I think the Indians actually revere the cow and consider it sacred because they do get milk from it. So the vegetarians are including animal products. It's just not the animal itself. But going to that, I do want to say, while plant foods contain some protein, they don't have all the types that we need. And that's why we want the animal foods included in the diet. We get the amino acids like taurine and glycine that exist mostly in animal foods. And of course, the B vitamins that are so critical for neurological function and a positive mood, even, they are found primarily in animal products. And liver is the richest source. This is one place where we get it wrong. And I do want to tell the listener this. You might be like, oh, great, I eat all kinds of meat. I eat chicken breasts all the time, boneless, skinless chicken breasts and things like that. That's okay, but it doesn't have the fats. We're not going about it the traditional way. So I would say, get a whole chicken and roast it. And then, you know, use the fat from the chicken to make some crispy chicken skin and eat it up. I mean, we used to be told to stay away from it, but a lot of these things, as we've alluded to earlier, are based on either misguided science or forces that don't want us to be healthy. But the fat and the protein together are important because if you eat too much lean protein, it can lead to some health issues down the line. So you want to have all of it together. And this is also why just supplementing isn't the best because you're not getting that kind of synergistic combination of the nutrients that you would get in whole, real foods. So I've interviewed some people who are very afraid of oxalates right now. I don't know if you've heard much about them, but you know, spinach and sweet potato and a lot of vegetables have anti-nutrients that can cause digestive distress. Well, I have two things to say about this. One is, I don't think our ancestors were eating these things year round. So they were eating seasonally, as you pointed out, Crow. So we need to eat these things in the right time, in the right season, and we'll probably be fine. But the other thing is, spinach was often accompanied by cream. You know, think about cream spinach. That was a dish on a lot of American plates back in the 1950s, I think. Now we don't even know what that is. But, you know, so we need to look for ways to combine foods and to eat them as our ancestors did for the most benefit. But there are so many nutrients, and this leads me to principle three, which I know I did touch on in our first episode together, which is nutrient density. That Dr. Price found that even in his day, that the indigenous peoples were eating foods that were replete with vitamins and fat-soluble activators or vitamins like A, D, E, and K, that they were having a much greater quantity of these foods in their diet than the people of his time in the U.S. And this is how he saw things turn around hands-on. He decided to give school children in Ohio just one decent meal a day. He thought, let me just see if I can help them with their behavior and their health issues. And it consisted of like a stew and sourdough bread with butter and raw milk. And indeed, the children started to improve in terms of their behavior and their health. And so I recommend that people take baby steps in the direction of applying some of these principles. You can easily get overwhelmed. But I think even just this step of seeking out nutrient density, in other words, more quality over quantity. You know, in the U.S., we're big on the all-you-can-eat buffet for $7.99, but half of that stuff isn't even food anymore, or they've cooked it up in seed oils. Even at Whole Foods, dare I say, it's true, they use a lot of canola oil. And the problem with these oils is they're kind of oxidized. You know, they ultra-process them and extrude from different seeds these oils, and it leaves the product rancid, but then they deodorize it, and they make it palatable so that we'll ingest it because it's cheap for them, but it's really not good for us. So if we want to start avoiding seed oils and looking for more nutrient density in our diet, we are going to be well on our way to living a healthier life.
You know, to me, a lot of this comes down to what kind of an individual you are. And I've thought this for a long time. Like, as an example, if you were to take someone who grew up in like an Alaskan Eskimo environment where 98% of their food is animal-based products, and you removed them and tried to switch them, I think it wouldn't go well. And I've said this so many times. I know people in my lifetime that can't be in the sun for more than a few minutes, and yet I can be in the sun all day. We're clearly very different in what our body is and what it demands. As I don't eat a lot of meat, but I find that minimally, I need eggs. Mm-hmm. Minimally. And I don't eat a lot of red meat, but occasionally I do. Of all the vegetarians I've known some of my friends who were vegetarians their whole life. They lost their teeth way too young. There have been other problems. But from my point of view, what I learned firsthand, here's an example that happened while everybody was participating in this community. Way back about 3 or 4 years ago, I had Clive on, and I was getting what's called a trigger finger. And I was on the air when I was telling Clive about this. And Clive says, oh, well, I sent you this magnesium and vitamin C, take them. While I was on the air, within 30 minutes, I could feel the trigger finger loosening. Well, over another couple of years, I started to get horrible arthritis in my hands. That is all gone now. You know why? Because I had Clive on a couple more times, and I ended up getting his niacin and B complex products. Mm-hmm. The first day that I took all those with my magnesium regime, that day, my arthritis was almost, couldn't notice it. It's completely gone now. So what I'm saying is if I went to the doctor and said, hey, I've got this horrible trigger finger, the first thing, which they did to my sister, you're going to need a surgery to fix that. Secondarily, for the arthritis, they would have put me on some petrochemical drug that would have never fixed anything, might have alleviated the symptoms. What I'm telling you is with simply magnesium, niacin, and a vitamin B complex, I completely reversed the effects. But I'm also saying someone with a different body makeup from different ancestry, that might not be the answer for them. I mean, what do you think? Is there any validity to the way I'm thinking about this?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I think we should turn to nature first and to real food. And I know that Clive's complexes are based on exactly that. And so that's phenomenal that you had that response. And someone else, you're right, bioindividuality. They may not respond as quickly, but generally, there are nutrients in food that are going to help us overcome things that doctors know nothing about. You know, in most medical schools, if they get an hour or two of nutrition over their years of study, that's the most they're going to get. I've spoken to many doctors and I've interviewed them on the Wise Traditions podcast, and they say they get very little training. So of course they say, here's this pill, or maybe get surgery or some cortisone shots or something to help your arthritis, because they don't know any better. So again, this is what I was alluding to earlier. Some of them are well-intentioned, but they've been trained in such a way, as a friend of mine says, it's almost like a connect the dots kind of medicine. You have this ailment, I'm going to connect it to this pharmaceutical drug that I've been told to promote to you. And now I'll get a little kickback and get to take a cruise. I mean, it's crazy the way those things work. So we have to do our own investigation. And I will also say this, that N equals one. And if I'm repeating myself, because I might've said that on the first episode, I apologize, but I have to say, everyone needs to see how these things play out for them. This is part of your mission in life. Who was the philosopher who said the unexamined life is not worth living? Pay attention. What is serving me well? Is being in front of my computer for 8 hours a day helping me or hurting me? Do I have a headache at the end of the day? Maybe it's not just that I'm straining my eyes, but maybe it's that I need to get outside and get more natural sunlight. So there are lots of things that I will share on the show, and certainly you do too, that people should take under advisement and then experiment and see for themselves what works. Principle number four that I want to share right now is that all people groups ate some of their animal foods raw and some of their foods cooked. Now, interestingly, on this principle, they didn't cook. Notice I didn't say they were cooking their animal foods, though they did. They cooked mostly their plant foods. Because the plant foods, as I said, have these anti-nutrients that need to be neutralized. And sometimes through the process of cooking or fermenting, especially also, the anti-nutrients can be set aside, making the nutrients that they do contain more bioavailable and making the things that could harm us or upset our digestive tract kind of sidelined. But then the animal foods, there is a life essence, as you alluded to earlier, Crow, that all foods contain. And if we eat them and take them in raw, we let those enzymes and that life essence kind of run through our bodies. So if you're not big on steak tartare, you might want to just try some raw cheese or some raw milk or raw oysters. You know, experiment again and see what makes you feel good. But I will say this, Sally Fallon Morrell is married to a man who is a healer of a different type, almost like a Reiki kind of energy healer. His name is Jeffrey Morrell. And Jeffrey eats oysters every single week. He was born in New Zealand. He got accustomed to it. Jeffrey is now 97 years old, and he is so sharp and so spry. Why? Maybe because of the magnesium and zinc in those oysters. But you know, if you don't live near the ocean and that's not doable for you, you can do as Crow does and look for some supplements that will serve you well. But make sure they're based on real foods and they're not synthetic, because if they're synthetically made, the body's going to have a hard time recognizing them, and you won't get the end result that you would if you had the food or more natural vitamins.
So I got to ask Jason. Jason, all these shows we've done, have you bumped into any things that you take regularly that really change things for you? For me, the magnesium, iodine, and selenium alone, and I have a feeling that that is almost universal, like most people would truly benefit from those. But when paired up with what I did, I mean, it cured my biggest problems. Do you have any similar things?
I recently just started taking both of those Bs as well. So I'm going to see what the long-term consequences, hopefully positive, will be. I didn't really have any significant issues, like a trigger finger or anything like that. So I don't take them every day. I take the iodine. I take the fulvic minerals. And what's the other one?
Yeah, I take that one as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I take them. I just don't take them every day because it just doesn't feel like I need them. My health is really good, thank heavens.
That's so good. And of course, we're all so different, right? I get a lot of supplements that different companies send me. I'm definitely interested in Clive's, by the way. But I do take magnesium and I take some organ kind of organ complexes, because I don't eat organ meat every day, though I do love my liverwurst. So I take a mix of things, but like you, Jason, I haven't had a lot of presenting problems, but I do think we need more of a boost now than ever before, because we're not even in touch with the earth as much as we used to be, right? So when Dr. Price visited these people around the world, everybody was barefoot. When I went to Ethiopia, everybody was barefoot. It's like, when was the last time I was barefoot? I actually do a lot of tree touching when it's winter, so I don't always get barefoot in the winter, but I think it's really important for us to get, like you were saying, Jason, the fulvic benefits, the nutrients that the earth wants to offer us. We're so cut off. So I do think supplementing is good for filling in the gaps, but a well-balanced diet is a great place to start. So I do try to get a lot of my nutrients just from the food that I eat as well. And I guess I want to get to number five before we break from hour one, because my little goal was like, let's at least get halfway. And that is that all Indigenous people groups enjoyed lacto-fermented condiments and beverages. And though lacto sounds like milk, it's actually not related to milk. It's just fermented foods. And there were no exceptions to this rule. From the South Pacific to Africa to, you know, pickles in the Asian diet, all around the world, there's fermented food. There's something extremely alive of fermented foods. And of course, people back in the day used fermentation as a process to preserve their foods. And now I'm happy to report that you can find fermented foods almost everywhere now, because people have noticed that it also helps with digestion and energy and mood.
And it means alive. Fermented means the food is living.
Yes. And it's a way of pre-digesting our food. You know, we as human beings only have one stomach. So there's no pre-digestion in other chambers like the cow might have, right? The reason cow can eat grass is because it has multiple chambers or stomachs. And so some of those chambers work to prepare the grass so that it can be maximized in the body. And so for us, fermentation takes that process and pre-digests the food for us so that we can get the most from the food, and it increases strength and stamina. I'll tell you a quick story of the Inuit that Dr. Price was with in Alaska, that he found that some tribes just threw their leftover, you know, fish carcasses and whale and whatever they had into like a ditch. And then they let their husky puppies and dogs that would pull the sleds, you know, feast on it. And it would start to rot and ferment. And they noticed that the animals had more strength and stamina than before. So I think this is how they started to realize, oh, maybe we need to include this in our diet as well. So yeah, it's, if we're lacking energy or stamina, yeah, we can pop a few pills, but what if we just started eating a little bit more fermented food? Like, it's not a bad idea. One way I like to include it in my diet is through kombucha. So that's, you know, the fermented tea from China, and it's on every supermarket shelf. It shocks me when I go into Safeway. I'm like, wait, it's in a regular grocery store now? Now, of course, some of those brands are not as good as like a home brew, let's say, but it's still got some probiotics and stuff in there. So that's one way I like to supplement and make sure I get ferments in my diet.
I made kombucha. Someone gave me one of those dinner-sized plates, mushroom-looking thing, and I made it. But here's the thing. Fermented foods, like, can you imagine a Japan that doesn't make soy sauce? That's happening right now. Japan's in dire straits. Their population is falling off a cliff. But there's only a few places left that make soy sauce. There was a reason. It wasn't just that it tastes good and it really helped with their fish, particularly if it was a day old. These were truly secret health foods. In the West where I grew up, when I was questioned at some point, I don't know, a couple of years ago, the fermented foods that I grew up, the only one I could think of is sauerkraut. Mm-hmm. And as I thought about it, there weren't a lot of them. But, you know, we had the fermenting fairy on. She has cured people of Crohn's disease with simply fermented beverages and a few eats. But we are right up at the top of the hour. Why don't you tell folks one more time where they can contact you and find your work, and then we'll wrap up and take a short break and come back for hour two.
Absolutely. I'm super excited, though. I do want to say this one fact about sauerkraut that you mentioned. There are more beneficial bacteria in a spoonful of raw sauerkraut than in an entire bottle of probiotic pills. So there you go for that one. But I'm so happy to be here. If folks want to find me, I've got my website, holistichilda.com, where I have a bunch of different resources for folks, including a detox PDF. I know you've been talking about detoxing with Clive and others on the show. Then I've got my YouTube channel where I try to put up shorts and little videos about the travels I've taken. It's called Holistic Hilda. And then I've got my Instagram, Holistic Hilda. And finally, of course, I'm the host and producer of the Wise Traditions podcast for the Weston A. Price Foundation. And folks can go to my website, of course, as well. I think I mentioned that, holistichilda.com.
All right. So there's a couple things. Jason, what's the name of it? Is it Oxy Power?
Oxy Powder.
Okay. So Dr. Group was on, and a lot of people took time to find problems with what he was talking about. But he turned us on to Oxy Powder. It is the real deal. And then when I looked online, all these people were complaining, hey, man, I took two of these things. I had diarrhea for 4 days. They don't get what's going on here. And this stuff is powerful and it cleans you out like nothing else I've seen short of enemas and really involved methods to try to cleanse out your body, fasting. So these things work. And anyone out there who was addicted to like drugs of some kind, particularly pharmaceutical drugs, I would estimate that this is one way to begin to clean that crap out of your system. My wife and I just got her tested in her hair, and we both had heavy metals problems. And I have a feeling that all those years that we were out in California when they were spraying chemtrails night and day, I would not be surprised if that was the source. But like this one thing alone, this Oxy Powder, I'm using it 3 times a week now to clean myself out, and I instantly notice a difference. I'm getting so many of the impurities out of my body. But as we prep up for hour two, I will say that as a world, the Western world, we have been elementally separated from nature. And it's everywhere from the tuning of our music to 440. It's not that it's cooking us or something. It's getting us inundated with vibrations which are detached from nature. All these Wi-Fi signals and all these other things have been implemented. And because of the heavy-handedness of what occurred in 2020 and all the other things we've been talking about, people have been jolted awake. And we're at a turning point now. Anyhow, we're going to prep up for hour two. So hour one is free to everybody at crow777radio.com. That is crrow777radio.com. Members know to log in. Members get access to all the forums. They can make their own forums. They get access to all the comments sections and the 2-hour film called Shoot the Moon anytime they want. It has 10 awards. It includes a number of lunar waves, and it has the double sun idea, which I'm going to be coming to work on this spring. I am convinced that there is another body there. I call it the sun we don't see, although I suspect that there will come a time in the next 20, 30 years when everyone knows it's there because we see it all the time. I'm going to set out to try to prove that there's something there to know about. With that, I'd like to wish each and every one of you a happy, healthy, and higher-minded new era, and I hope to see you logged in as a member for hour number two. There it is, man. Cheers. We'll be right back.
belief is the enemy of knowing.